Hi, I'm Stephen.
And hi, I'm Charlotte.
And welcome to Mirth and Magic, the RPG podcast.
Welcome back, guys.
Hi guys, welcome to episode whatever of Mirth and Magic. I don't even know what number it is anymore, do you?
No, I've lost track now.
10?
Nine? Something like that.
Oh, it's a shame. We should have done number 8 for Final Fantasy 8, shouldn't we?
I was just thinking that as well. That would have been poetic and beautiful, but sadly not.
Well, we can do Final Fantasy 11 next.
Do we have to?
No.
Do I have the time to play that in 2 weeks? The answer is no.
How are you doing anyway? Have you got any interesting RPG news or general gaming news as we are now extending our reach?
Yeah, we are. I've bought Elden Ring, which arrived a couple of days ago, but annoyingly, I've only had the chance to play like the first 25 minutes so far. And don't get me wrong, they seem like a very good 25 minutes, but I need some time, probably this Sunday, to sink some proper time into it. But I'm excited to play it.
Oh, cool. Do you get to make your own character?
You do, but in my classic gaming style, I would put minimal effort into it. I'd instantly put a hood on him, so it didn't really matter. Oh. I know if you were playing it, you'd spend about 3 hours making him look like fucking Sabrina the Teenage Witch or something ridiculous.
Yes, exactly. Sabrina the Teenage Witch is my role model for all Souls games. Yeah. I haven't got Elden Ring, but I did buy Demon Souls, which is, you know, same studio and type of game. I don't know why. I haven't really even heard of Elden Ring. It wasn't on my radar until everyone started buying it on the launch day, including you. I'm like, oh, what's this game?
See, I've been excited for a while. I didn't pre-order it initially. I thought I'd just wait for it to come out, but then the hype got to me and I gave in and ordered it.
It's like an open world game, right? For the first time or something.
Yeah. And I haven't quite got to that stage of the game yet. I'm at like the very first like boss that you die to. So I haven't explored it yet, but it's getting really good reviews. So I'm excited to see the kind of combination of classic Dark Souls with open world stuff.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that sounds really good. I'm definitely going to get it. I'm going to finish Demon's Souls and then I'll get Elden Ring after that. I keep calling it Elden Ring, like, you know, like an old person's ring.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'd say Elden.
It's Elden got an N on it, right? It's not Elden Ring.
Yeah, Elden Ring.
I keep saying Elden Ring. Well, I'm playing Demon's Souls, like I said, and it's really good. It's a remake of the original Demon's Souls back in 2009, and it was remade for PS5. It was one of the launch games for PS5. I've wanted it for a while, but not really been too into it. And then I just got in the mood to buy it. I don't know what prompted it, really. Maybe the sale price prompted it. I don't know. But it's really good. Like, the character creator, which, you know, I'm a huge fan of, is really detailed. And for the first time, the characters that you make look nice. Like, no more derpy-faced Bloodborne characters. You know what I mean?
Oh, I love the fact that they look so bizarre.
I mean, you can make them still look bizarre if you want to. But now they look graphically beautiful as well.
Classically beautiful. Oh, I like that.
I said graphically, but yeah, classically as well. Yeah, sure.
Oh, I prefer classically beautiful. I much prefer that.
So I made a guy called Sajiro after my favourite Persona 5 character. Although he doesn't look anything like him.
I was going to say, like, I've made an elderly man holding a cat. That's what I've created.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, though. Like, you can pick the order you want to play it in, like what world you want to go to. So I'm doing this horrible prison world at the moment. It's like an abandoned prison where everyone's been locked up for years with no one to look after them. Yeah, it's really creepy.
Ooh, that sounds good though. Mm-hmm. I think I might have to invest in that at some point. I can probably just about justify getting one From Software game a month. So maybe that'll be my April treat.
I think, well, if you do, I mean, we should play together. I mean, I know you have a weird thing about not being online, but it actually forces you to be online, this one.
Oh, does it? Ooh.
Yeah.
So right, I do have a weird thing about that.
You don't have to play with people. It's just that you always see them. So, like, you'll see messages on the floor from other people that say, like, friendly person ahead. And if it's true, you can vote it up. And I think if you get enough upvotes, you get healed in a battle.
Oh, like in Bloodborne, when you could leave, like, little notes.
On yeah, exactly. Like,
not what I ever did. But yeah.
And you can also see bloodstains of where players have died, and you can see the last few seconds of their life. So, like, if you can't see around a corner, but there's a bloodstain there, you can press it and see what happened to that person. You're like, oh, maybe there's a monster up ahead. You know what I mean?
Ooh, they should be nosy. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about this online player thing is that it shows you the outlines of players, like ghosts, that are in your kind of local area. And I think by local, it means like 100-mile radius, or maybe even bigger, that have been there in the past 2 minutes. So sometimes at the corner of your eye, you'll see a ghost walk past you. Oh, shit, is that an enemy? Oh, no, another fucking player. It's happened to me so many times. You get used to it, but it's happened so many times. It's only for a couple of seconds, too. Like, not the entire time, but, yeah. So just at the corner of your eye when you're, like, really tense and just see another player falling over or something. Like, oh, my God, what was that?
So, and you can't turn it off at all?
No.
Oh, that seems terrible.
Yeah, like it's only for 2 or 3 seconds, and it's only if people are actually playing in your local area, like 100-mile area or something. But yeah, it's a bit annoying, but you do get used to it.
I'll let it slide. It adds to my thing of hating being online, but I'll let it slide.
So, this week's game, I think you should take the lead.
I'm so excited for talking about this week's game. I have been waiting for this moment since we started this podcast to talk about the masterpiece of Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay, go ahead. I'll just sit back and listen.
Yeah, so Steve, you could just mute your mic for the next hour and a half, and I'll just list all the ways in which Zelda has really good hair, and it will be a great time for everyone involved.
I'm actually going to go out, so just like text me when you're done, and I'll come home and turn the microphone off, okay?
We're just going to rename the Mirth and Magic podcast to just Misery, and it's just going to be this for like 5 hours. It's going to be good.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's get into it then.
You sound so enthusiastic.
No, I am. Okay, sorry. Let's get into it then.
Oh, much better. Much more energy. Much more selfie-like. Yes. Big improvement.
Oh, do not call me selfie.
I could call you worse. I could call you Quistis.
No, that is worse. That's right. Yeah, that's an insult, if anything.
It's the worst insult, that bitch.
Oh, well, strong. I mean, I don't get that much, but okay.
We will get into my opinions on Quistis and her bloody tutorials. Like, we will get into that. So, to start off with, should we say about our histories with the game? Because I know I've mentioned mine in previous podcasts, but numerous times, in fact. But I don't know much about yours.
Oh, boy. Well, I played Final Fantasy VII first, and I played that before Final Fantasy VIII came out. So, when Final Fantasy VIII was released, I begged my mum for it for Christmas. And I knew she'd bought me it because I'd seen it in her bedroom. And I started playing the game in secret and putting the discs back at night until Christmas. And I was like, oh, my God, Final Fantasy VIII, what a mega surprise. And then actually I was already 8 hours into it.
Yeah, like, oh, what a surprise. It comes with like a save file on my memory card as well.
Well, my mother didn't know that. She didn't play PlayStation. So that was awful of me, but I loved it at the time. I think I've played through it maybe 3 times. I played it twice around that age, and then I went back to it when I was about 20, 22, 23, and I haven't played it since.
3 times, you amateur.
Yes. So why don't you tell us your history? Get ready, everyone.
Everyone, settle down.
Yeah, so get comfortable.
Everyone, prepare yourselves. So this was the first ever RPG that I played as a kid. And I think very early on, like one of the first games full stop that I played, I think before this, I'd played Mario, and I wouldn't be able to tell you what this game is called or what platform it was on, but it was one where you're some kind of detective. And the only bit of the game I can recall is a cafe blowing up and finding a clown's nose in the sewers. That's the only bit of this game that I can remember. Don't know its name, but that was the first ever computer game I played. I know it's gone way off topic, but
I'm Googling Clown No Sewer right now.
It's some kind of detective-ish game. I'm fairly sure it's like a detective thing.
Unfortunately, Googling Clown No Sewer brings up Stephen King's It all the time, so I'm not going to find that anytime soon.
Ugh, ruining it. But anyway, yeah, that was like my first computer game, and then Final Fantasy VIII was like my first proper RPG experience. And my mum bought it for me and then played it with me because I was a bit too young to play it on my own. So most of my first run through of Final Fantasy VIII was sitting next to her on the sofa, kind of being motivational more so than actually playing, and being a judgmental little bitch whenever she failed something. I was like, God, mum, obviously you need to draw more thunder. Come on.
I don't understand why your mum bought it. Did she want to play it, or did you read about it in a magazine or something? Or
so what I remember is me and my mum reading some kind of magazine, and I wouldn't be able to tell you why we were reading it. And my mum going, "Oh, you might like the sound of this," because I used to read a lot of like fantasy books and stuff when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And she was like, "Oh, maybe you'd like playing something like this." And then she bought it for me as a surprise, and we played it together. And it's one of my favourite childhood memories. And since then, it's always been my favourite game as well.
That's nice. That's a nice little story.
Wholesome, isn't it? Yeah.
And how many times have you played it since this first time?
Oh, God. I have lost count of the times I've played it, but it's well over 10. Well over 10. Probably over 15.
How many consoles?
Mostly I've played it on like the old PS1 version. Mm-hmm. And then I had it where you could buy the PS1 version on the PS3. And then I've played the remastered version a few times as well.
Right, okay.
And I still have a bit of a soft spot for the old PS1 version, I must admit.
Even though Squall's face has been improved in the remastered one.
And I've got a soft spot for his weird, squashed up Master Steve face of the original. The best looking guy there. That's just...
Slim Pickens.
It's either that or Irvine, which is like four pixel ponytail. Yeah. So, should we get into the story of Final Fantasy VIII? As bizarre as it is to explain this story to someone who hadn't played it before, because it sounds like the worst game ever.
Oh boy, I'm looking forward to you relaying this story in your words. Go on.
And try to not make it sound mental. Yeah. So you play as young teenagers. Although looking at them, you think they were like 30-year-old adults. But you play as basically teenagers in a mercenary school. And again, it starts to fall down really early on, this game, just at that alone, where they basically train you up to fight people as a small army of teenagers to fight in full-blown wars at times for money. And not even money that they get, money that the school gets. It's some kind of like weird war regime. It's horrific. But when I was playing it, I was like, God, I'd like to be in this world. This seems reasonable. Definitely not child exploitation. Definitely.
You want to go to Balham Garden as a student?
With that lovely peaceful music playing all the time, where your only like hobbies were either going to the library or fighting a dinosaur in like the park. These are the only options to do in your spare time.
Or planning the festival. That was a thing, right?
Or planning the garden festival. Yeah. Yeah. So many good options of ways to spend your childhood. And then essentially the main character, whose name is Squall, he is, well, Mr. No Personality for most of this game. He becomes like one of the elite teenage fighters called Seed and ends up being sent on a mission to help a small resistance group called the Timber Owls and meets a girl called Rinoa. Mm-hmm. And antics ensue. They try to assassinate a sorceress who's leading an army. And then it turns out that her sorceress powers go into Rinoa, who then becomes a sorceress. Then you go into space. And then she, sounds bizarre, she unleashes another sorceress who falls out of space, lands on Earth, is revived. She merges with Rinoa. She like junctions her into her, literally into her chest. Then you kill that sorceress. Then time compression occurs and you go backwards and also forwards in time to a castle where you then fight another sorceress who's been doing all this through essentially time travel, and that's the end of the game. And that sounds like a clusterfuck, and it is, but I love it. It's a clusterfuck that I love.
You missed out so many details in that story. Like
it was a base synopsis.
Yeah, you missed out entirely how Adia, the sorceress who you slammed so heavily in the first part of that story, is actually the best character in the game.
Oh, we will get into characters, don't you worry. I was trying to decide like how detailed to go into this, of explaining all of it. Like, so then some missiles are launched. Then you realise the school can fly. I was like, how much of this should I go into in the first 5 minutes of the podcast? And I decided to hold off ever so slightly.
Well, that was an interesting story.
Thank you.
I think this is the first story I really understood, because like Final Fantasy VII had that like eco-warrior story, right? At least to begin with. And I didn't really get it at the time. I do now, obviously. But I think this is the first story that I actually got, I understood properly.
Yeah. I must admit, I understood it quite well when I was a kid as well. Mm-hmm. But looking back, it's one of those games you have to take with a pinch of salt, because it is bizarre. Like, none of it makes any sense.
Oh, yeah, why you're
doing these things. I do remember when I first played this game, when you go to Estar to try and save Rinoa and kind of revive her. And at no point does anyone mention going into space. At no point do they discuss it. There's no prelude. It's suddenly, so are you happy to go to space? And I was like, well, obviously the answer is yes, but fucking why?
Rinoa is like, she's in space, right? And you have to go save her. That's the reason you go to space.
You take her into space with you. So Squall's logic is Rinoa's fallen into a coma, but Ilone has the ability to kind of time travel. So if he puts the two together, Ilone might be able to send him back in time and save her. Which, again, there's no reason why that plan would work. He just comes up with it. And then it turns out that Eloni's in space, so he takes Rinoa into space. It's
And why does Ultimisia, why does she want to compress time?
I think the logic given in the game is that she wants to live in a world that only she could exist in. And apparently the only way to do that is time compression, which in itself is pretty vaguely explained.
So she's basically the original Isamu from SMT3, you know, the hat guy.
Oh god, that you dare refer to any Final Fantasy character as hat guy out of SMT3. As a personal offense.
Well, he wants a world where like everyone can create their own little fantasy and live out their own weird little life. And maybe you got the idea from Ultimisia. Actually, no. I'm going to say he's before Final Fantasy VIII. No, it was a couple of years after.
He would have been. At least he didn't get his fashion design after Ultimisia. He took that to a whole new level.
Oh, he did.
Oh, terrible. He did.
Although, to be fair, she's not exactly well-dressed either.
She's got this like weird bare feet with those like monster claws. Odd design. Apparently sorceresses have monster feet and don't wash them, according to her design. It's very strange.
Well, Adia does not have monster feet. Adia has lovely feet, I'm sure. And
can't see her feet. She might have mental feet.
Yeah, she kind of shuffles or floats along the ground, doesn't she?
She does. She sways along.
I like her big weird headpiece too. It's so impractical and ridiculous.
Oh, he pulls it off though. She gets away with that. So what did you think of the story of Final Fantasy VIII? Because I know it's one of the more criticised aspects of the game.
Yeah, I found it really complicated. I did understand it at the time, mostly, apart from when the story starts, it seems quite simple, because you're working for the school and you have your exams and, you know, you're working in your exams to get your salary every couple of days and you take on these missions. And then you slowly get involved with Rinoa and then everything starts going to shit. Partially, I might add, or I would say 50% of the reason why everything goes to shit is because of Quistis.
Completely.
Because at one point when you go to assassinate the sorceress, she decides, actually, I have to apologize first. Why? Why now? Oh my God. And you can't do anything about it. You can't disagree. You have to go and apologize. It's not entirely her fault. I mean, Irvine also chickens out of the assassination, but I'm glad because I love Adia. She's the best character in the game. And if she'd have died early on, I would have been very upset.
That's true.
You didn't mention anything about Laguna. I liked that little side story, I guess you call it.
Hmm. That's true, actually. I didn't. And it is an interesting one, because I remember when I first played that game and it switched to him and I was like, who are these other people? Like, I don't want them in my game. And now when I play it, I like it. And their battle music theme.
I was about to say, well, what is this jazzy battle music?
Yeah, that do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh, it's so good. I've once again managed to sing in one of our podcasts. So
I always save the Diablo lamp for those guys.
Oh, do you? Interesting. I thought of doing that.
I think it's easier. Although it makes literally no sense in the story. Like, you'd fall asleep and start dreaming about Laguna, and you wake up with a new Guardian Force.
Yeah.
I think the fight's easier with those guys.
I must admit, I really like that bit. And obviously, like, spoiler, but it turns out that it's hinted at the game that Laguna is Squall's dad, obviously. And I think it does add another nice element when you, like, replay it and you're like, oh, this is Squall's dad and Renoa's mum nearly hooking up and those two nearly not existing. It does add a nice little unusual bit to the game.
I thought he was definitely confirmed to be his dad.
I think it is, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it ever explicitly says it in the game, but it's hinted at so heavily that it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. When it started getting to the later story of Ultimisia and the space, I did find it a bit complicated, and I probably would get it now if I played again. And I probably got it when I played when I was older, but at the time I just played it and didn't really take it all in.
Yeah, I think for the last third of that game, it really goes off the rails a little bit of the kind of manic fantasy stuff that they hadn't really led up to, and it all happens all within about a disc of all this dramatic things occurring. But I must admit, I still enjoy it. There's so much of quite good slow build up in the first couple of discs that I was already warm to the characters enough that, to me at least, it could just about get away with going a bit crazy at the end, because mm-hmm. I was invested in the characters enough to not mind too much that the story went a bit strange.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the base thing of those two being in love and those all being friends was still present enough that I was like, okay, you can go do some crazy stuff that makes no sense. I'm still invested in what's going to happen.
Yeah, and love is a major theme in this story, I think. I think this is the most like romantic Final Fantasy of all the modern ones.
Oh, definitely. It's like the main theme, really, isn't it? Because you've got Squall and Renoa, and then you've got Laguna and Rain, and Laguna and Julia, and Irvine and Selphie, who flirt once. That's about it.
But flirt once, and then they're a married couple at the end, practically.
Yeah. But and all like the kind of the love themes and people's personal themes all kind of go over each other, that there's common themes and things. It's definitely one of the more romantic based Final Fantasy ones. And mm-hmm. I actually quite like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's even like, you know, like the logo for each Final Fantasy game, the love theme's even evident in the logo. It's two of them like hugging, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a kind of stylized version of when he rescues her from the Sorceress Memorial and she kind of like jumps into his arms, isn't it? In the main artwork, Squall's face looks very strange. He looks like this kind of hench, long-haired biker. No idea why.
In the cover art, you mean?
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, he looks nothing like him.
Well, it's like stylized, right, I guess. It's not meant to be like identical.
Yeah, very stylized. So should we go into the world of Final Fantasy VIII? Because I really, really like this world, but it's got that similar theme to Final Fantasy VII, where it's a bit more based in modern day real life than a lot of the other Final Fantasy games. Like it's quite modern. There's trains, there's modern vehicles. And I really like the world, but I know a lot of people didn't like how modern it was. And they were quite glad when 9 went back to that kind of more medieval fantasy type look. So what did you think of it?
I really liked it. So obviously, like I said, I played 7 first, and 7 is very like steampunky, and there's a mix of biomes in there. Like there's, you know, there's Wutai, which is like Japanese / Chinese based, and you've got Midgar, which is like a neon like mega city. Then when you get to Final Fantasy VIII, there are some strange structures. Like the garden itself is a very bizarre looking floating building, but the game is I think it's a very European looking game. Like there's a lot of European influences, like stone buildings and that kind of thing, and it's a mix of like modern and more sci-fi, like futuristic places in the game as well. I mean, they're in space, for God's sake, at one point. And The world map, you start the game in Balon, which is where your garden is. It's like, I liked how you could, because in Final Fantasy VII, when you walked around the world, you couldn't see the other party members. Like when there was a talking scene, they'd pop out of you, like they were inside you this whole time. But in Final Fantasy VIII, they would follow you around, but it was a bit creepy because it'd like follow your exact step. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like literally if you did a
single file. Yeah.
It was better because it was more immersive because you could see them, but it wasn't like Final Fantasy, like let's say 15, for example, they still follow you, but they do their own thing and they're not all a single file in a straight line behind you, you know?
Oh my God. I'd love like a modern game like Final Fantasy 15 to still have them just single file. Everyone stand behind me. Come on, Ignis, line up.
I did like that about the world. I get that the limitations of the time probably of the game made that the reason why they had to do that. But I really like the towns. What is the town called? It's Fisherman's Horizon, which I really liked.
Oh, yeah. The music for Fisherman Horizons is
nice, isn't it? Really nice.
Yeah. Really nice. I mean, we'll get onto the music in a bit because I love the soundtrack of this game. But that song particularly is so peaceful.
What's the town called where the Timber Owls are based? It's a Timber. Yeah, I like Timber too.
Bloody idiot.
Yeah, Timber's nice, but I remember I get lost in it all the time.
Really?
Did you? Yeah, I remember getting lost in it all the time.
No, but then I also knew it was called Timber. So maybe we had different experiences of this place.
What did you think of the world?
I really, really liked it. I got a real kind of sense of exploration with that world of you start off on a very small island and then you travel by train and you see the train going like through underwater channels and things. And there's all these beaches with different monsters. The monsters kind of suit the different areas you are. And then eventually you get the garden that you can travel to some places on the map, but not all of them. And eventually you escalate up to the airship and all the cities are so different and so lively. And because you access them all at different points of the game rather than all quite in rapid succession, I got a real sense of that being a massive world to explore. Especially when you've got quite like the secret sort of areas like the Cetra Ruins where you get Odin and like the research facility and Shumi Village and all these places where you'd only get to them if you went and actively explored this really big map.
And like the temple where the brothers are as well.
Yeah, there's just so many places and it's really varied. And occasionally you'll get to these cities that are really, like you said, quite sci-fi and high-tech, like Estar and places. But then you will get places like Shumi Village where it's really quaint, and like Windhill where Laguna lived for a while when it's this tiny country village and things. And you've just got a really nice mix of this world feeling like it's very real. It's not all big cities. It's these tiny little villages as well where people just live their everyday lives. I find it a really rich world.
Yeah, totally. It's one of the better ones in the Final Fantasy series, I think.
Yeah.
I really like Final Fantasy VII's world and I really like Final Fantasy VIII. And then not much after that, to be honest.
And it's nice because there's a lot of reason to go back to places. Like a lot of the Final Fantasy games, you'll go to a place and then you don't really have a reason to go back there again. Like if you think of Final Fantasy VII, for example, like obviously you go back to Midgar, but a lot of the little villages and things in between, there's not really any reason to go back. Like to Carb and Costa del Sol, you never really have reason to go back to them.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Anything new. Whereas at least here, like you go back to Balon multiple times, you go back to Fisherman's Horizon multiple times. It just makes it feel more real to me than going to a village for 10 minutes and then never going back to it again.
I mean, at least you can go back to it in Final Fantasy VII if you want to, but in Final Fantasy X, it's literally not an option anymore. You can't go backwards.
Yeah, that's true. Until the end of the game, I suppose.
When you fast travel. Yeah.
I must admit, in 10, though, that didn't bother me so much because it felt like a journey. Like, it would have broken the immersion a little bit to be like, I know we're meant to be trying to go and stop Sin and save the world, but can we just go back to Killica quickly and just fuck about there for a few days? In that game, because of the story setup, I got it. But in this game, it suits it really well being able to freely travel around because you're meant to be a student who's not quite sure what's going on and where they're meant to be going, and it fits nicely. So should we move on to the battle system? Because like as much as I love this game, I will acknowledge it's a broken battle system.
Oh, and again, I actually really like the battle system in this game.
That's what I was about to say as well. I actually really like it, and it's one of my favourite ones to play. But you can make this game so easy, so early on, if you want to, because of the way it's been made. So Final Fantasy VIII uses quite a unique system in, I think, pretty much any RPG, really. I've not come across one that's like this, with the junction system, where in order to use commands and use spells and do any kind of special abilities, you need to equip guardian forces onto characters. And the guardian forces themselves learn these abilities for then the characters to use. So, for example, if you want to use the command revive to revive a party member back to full health, you'll need a guardian force who's learned that ability. So in a way, without guardian forces, your characters are pretty much worthless, like they would die instantly. But the way to mainly make characters stronger is to junction magic onto their stats, which again, you can only do if they have a guardian force equipped with that specific stat learned. And the main way to get this is to either draw magic from enemies or to refine items into magic. And the monsters in this game level up with your characters. So once you're a high enough level for the monsters to have the strongest magic in the game, you sit in one battle if you wanted for half an hour, you draw 100 of the strongest magic, and that's it for the game, really. And it's an unusual system where your strength isn't based on what level you are particularly, it's based on how quickly you've managed to amass strong magic, which in turn then discourages you from ever using magic in battle, because you won't ever want to use it because you want it junctioned onto your characters. It encourages this strange system of hoarding magic so it can be equipped to you and then pretty much just physically attacking constantly by the time you reach the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit, you can get really overpowered really quickly. By disc one, you can have 999 HP if you want to. But there is a bit of nuance to it. Like, you can fiddle around with the what spells equipped to what stat. It doesn't make a difference. I like how you can junction magic to your weapon as well, to your attack.
Yeah.
You can junction poison or fire after make a fire attack or whatever with your normal attack. I like that.
Yeah, I really like that as well. And how you can have characters absorb certain magic. So if you know you're going up against a fire boss, you'd equip fire to your defense so that it would become nullified or you'd absorb it. Yeah, it does make you you can get really OCD about that game of making yourself invincible. And for someone like me who really likes that kind of system where you get really intricate, that's really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you can easily get pretty much max stats very early on. In Disc 1, my main thing would be I'd get some money from being a seed. Then I'd buy tents from a shop, which then refine into Curaja. And then that's it. You've got such high health without even having to leave the first city. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the beach in Balaam and you can get crystals from the fish there, you can find them into water magic, which is really strong. You put that on strength. And again, you're pretty much unbeatable until the end of Disc 2 and you'd start getting stronger magic. And once you know where to get them early on, it's kind of hard to not do it in future playthroughs because you know the options there.
There's no reason not to do it, really.
Exactly. It's a shame that the game can be broken so easily, but at the same time, it doesn't take away my enjoyment of it. Still love being able to blitz through that game really fast, because to get to that point of knowing where to get all that stuff, like, it took me playing it multiple times. Like, I feel like I've earned that status, if you will, of being able to play through it that quick. And yeah, it's just really fun to me, especially as to get some of the guardian forces to do all this. Some of them are quite secret and quite hard to get. So again, you feel like you've earned it once you get to that point.
Yeah, you can easily get through the game and not get half of the guardian forces, right? A lot of them are optional.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say probably about half of them, yeah.
Yeah. Some of them are really, really well hidden too, like Doomtrain, for example, right?
Oh, yeah. Doomtrain is one of those ones where I know you can get little magazines in the game that hint towards what you need, but I think unless someone told you or you Googled it, personally, I don't think I ever would have figured out exactly what you needed in order to summon him.
Yeah, I must have used a guide back in the day. I used to be obsessed with Game FAQ's website. Do you ever go on that when you were a kid?
Yeah, yeah.
And I would read all the FAQs like from start to finish, like a loser, and learn all the little secrets and stuff. So I probably could pick you up from that. But yeah, I agree. Unless you were particularly observant, there is no way you would have worked out how to get Doomtrain on a blind playthrough.
No, definitely not. And it's like the Tombri Guardian Force, where you have to go to the ruins and kill about 20 Tombris. And the Tombris don't give you any experience when you beat them. So why would you ever go there and beat 20 of them unless you knew that Guardian Force would show up? And there's no hint that he will if you kill 20. It's complete. Like, and I guess if you, unless you looked it up, you would not know.
It's a strange way to get the Catuar one as well.
The Catuars one, there's like a little island just outside the desert where he actually appears on the map. He actually appears and you have to like run into him. So
right.
I think if you'd been on that desert and you'd happen to have seen him pop up on this little island, you'd be like, oh, I wish I could get to that island, but it was no beach. So I remember like when I first played, I saw that little Catuar when I was on the desert and was like, that's really weird. I've never seen an enemy appear on the map before, but I couldn't get to it. And then as soon as I got the airship, I was like, right, that's where I'm going first, because there's something weird on that island and I want to go find out what it is. And again, that's quite satisfying.
What's your favorite GF?
Ooh, my favorite one. Other than in Disc 1, I never used to really summon them or use them, because you could make your physical attack so strong there wasn't really any need to by that point. But I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this because I have no idea if this is how it's meant to be pronounced, but Quetzalcoatl is how I'm going to say it. Because in my head, that sounds right.
That's how I say it too, but I'm sure Quetzalcoatl, but I don't think that's how you meant to say it.
No, I don't think so either. But he was always my favourite because I liked his little design of that like strange faceless bird. I just thought it was really interesting looking.
I really liked Cybern for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's just like this naked woman with these weird like wing ear things protruding.
Yeah, she's strumming on a harp, but you can't hear her singing, like silent singing. The first Guardian Force, Ifrit, you know when you like, it's part of your exam for the seed test, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You have to beat him as part. Yeah. Have you ever beat him on the lowest time?
What, Ifrit?
Yeah. Is it like 10 minutes or something, the lowest one?
I'm not sure. I've definitely done it in the second highest, which I think is 20 minutes. I don't know if I ever have done it in 10, actually.
I bet you could.
Probably could, to be fair. I think I just went like slightly overly cautious. So I was like, no, 20. Just in case I fall over or something, I don't know. But yeah, I think it probably can really easily be done in 10.
I always remember if you use Shiva on him, it's like, oh, they've got Shiva? Like, yes.
Is that really so surprising? I'm fairly sure like half the students at this school have her, but okay.
I'm not even sure why Shiva is strong against him, because doesn't fire melt ice? I guess it turns into water, doesn't it? I guess.
Yes, the melted ice defeated him. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Weird.
That's true, actually. Water should be strong. Like Leviathan.
Yeah.
Who would be useful there? I never even thought of that. Yeah.
Oh my God, they got Shiva. Oh my God, no. This must be like the 900th time I've been beaten in this cave by all the students.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, Ifrit, you're so lame.
And every one of them's had Shiva, but for some reason, this is surprising.
I'm shocked that this man dressed in all leather has her as well. What a surprise.
Did you like the brothers? Do you remember those guys?
I did like them, actually, where the small little one is like the older, more mature brother. Yeah.
Yeah. So they do rock, paper, scissors, don't they, when you summon them?
Yes. Yeah. And he gets thrown into them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting all these memories in the back now. When you fight them, I remember you can cheat completely by casting float on yourself. They've got earth magic, right?
Yeah, they do like an earthquake move. And if you're floating, then they can't hurt you. And when you first arrive at that temple, there's some other students running out and I think they shout float as like a hint that that's what you should do. Yeah.
Mm. The summons in this game, like I think this is one of the best games for summons because like 7, they're not really, well, they're not part of the plot at all, really. And there's some interesting ones, but they're more embedded into this game. They're basically the whole story of the game, right?
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Well, I like the designs a lot too. I like the Ifrit design. It's one of the best ones in the Final Fantasy series that I remember. Like that weird like flame dog, I guess you call it. I don't really know what to describe Ifrit. He looks like a devil.
The flying dog devil.
Ifrit.
I just like the description of the flying dog devil. I'm like, that conjures up a completely different image in my head.
That could be Ifrit or Angela for all you know, flying through the air when Minoa shoots him.
That's true, as a cannon.
Yeah.
Which, again, something to definitely mention, because what the fuck?
The battle system as well, the limit breaks in this game are pretty good. They're interesting. They're more interactive than other games.
Yeah, I really like them as well. And again, they're a bit of the game that you can manipulate very easily, because you just need to keep a character in low HP or use the spell aura, and you could just spam them over and over. And some of them especially are so strong. You could beat the game so easily with Squall's Limit Break, especially if you just use that over and over. But I agree, they were more interactive. They were fun to actually do. They weren't just clicking a button. They reminded me kind of Tifa's Limit Break in 7, where you actually have to do something in order for it to work. And I liked that rather than like some of the other games where all you need to do is you get a limit, you click X, and they do it. It's definitely a more fun version.
Yeah, so you've got Squall's one, which requires a bit of button pressing at certain times. And then there's Quistis's one, which you have to actively learn spells right from enemies, the blue magic. And then you've got Irvine's one, which lets you equip different... Do you equip them or just have them in your inventory? Like different bullets that have different effects?
Yeah, I think you just have them in your inventory and then you can like choose which ones you use. I must admit, I don't play with Irvine very often, but I'm fairly sure that's how his works.
Zell is, if I remember, is it a bit like combinations?
Yeah, so it's like typing in codes, essentially, to do the moves. And then the quicker you type them in, the more moves he'll do. And his is another one that it takes more time to do his limit breaks, but they can be so powerful if you string a load of them together.
Yeah, yeah. Selfie has the slots.
Yes.
Does anyone out?
So Renoa has her dog, which is, again, mental.
That's her first limit break, right? She gets two, doesn't she? She gets the other ones later.
Yeah, she gets Angel Wing when she becomes sorceress, but it's a similar issue to hoarding magic, is that you don't want Renoa to use up all your good magic.
Yeah.
That's like an uncontrolled sorceress, because I'm like, stop it, I need that. Just quit it.
But the Angela ones are so bizarre. Like, you know, the ones where he goes to find an item and stuff or whatever, or you're sending to attack, that's fine, but putting him on your arms, firing a dog into an enemy is lunacy.
Not only do you fire the dog at them, it causes an actual explosion. Like, what's exploding? Is it the dog?
The dog's exploding. I don't get it. And then he's fine. He appears again next time you summon him. Oh, my God.
Yeah, then she just gives him a treat. And I'm like, that dog needs more than a bloody treat after that.
Exactly. Yeah, I really like the battle system, like I said. I think it's one of the better ones, even though you can totally game it really early on.
Oh, definitely. Especially if you start collecting cards early on and then refine them into items. You'll have such strong weapons and such strong spells by the end of Disc 1 that you could pretty much complete the game then if you wanted to.
We haven't mentioned Triple Triad yet, but we should, because I love that game.
Oh, we should, definitely. But I'll just mention one other quick thing, is that I've seen some reviews of this game from other people, and I've seen some people say that they really struggle to finish this game. They really struggle with the battle system. They struggle at certain bosses where they get completely stuck and they can't seem to progress. So I don't know if it's just because of the amount of times we've played this game, or that like once this battle system clicks, it makes sense. But it does seem to be that there are some people who don't feel that this battle system is overpowered and feel quite the opposite, that it's really difficult to use. So I think it's a bit of a opinion splitter with this system.
It just takes time to get used to it. Like the first time I played it, it was confusing. But you just go through the tutorial again. It does explain it pretty well, that tutorial. And once you realise that you can like equip certain magic to certain stats, it becomes a joke.
Yeah.
Like you just need time to get used to it, I think. I remember some bosses that were really hard for me. Do you remember the one where you go into the basement of the garden and you fight the big, I don't know what you call him. I think it's like the headmaster or something.
Norg. Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I found that really hard, that fight. I don't know why, but I did. And I also found the fight where you know, the one where Ultimecia, I think, has Renoa like strapped to her chest.
Oh, when she's literally like absorbed into Adele.
Yeah.
I kept killing Renoa by accident over and over again. Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
So I found a fight difficult for the first couple of times, and then I remember I must have tried about 4 or 5 times and I get really frustrated, and then the 6th time or so I had Chrissy's in the party and she had learned a move called Kamikaze. Did you ever learn Kamikaze?
Yeah.
It's a one-shot kill of that boss. You can kill it in like the first turn, just Kamikaze straight into Ultimecia and it's gone.
Oh really? I didn't realize you could do that.
Yeah. Renault is not hurt. It's just a one target spell or ability. You could just totally game it. Like, that difficult fight got turned into literally a one turn fight.
I did not realize that. I would always just be a fucking idiot and be like, Ren's a Kuchen. But I'm so sorry, Renault. I've absolutely annihilated you, and I'm very sorry.
I think Kamikaze is based on your HP. So as long as you've got 999 HP, you can kill her in one shot.
Oh, I didn't realize that. See, I think part of that is that I never really use Quistis because, and it's not fair to Quistis that her tutorial levels annoyed me so much that I hate her. Like, I don't refuse to use her.
I don't remember if it's her ability or if, whether it's one you learn from a Guardian Force. I just happened to have it on Quistis at that time. I don't remember, but.
Oh, fair.
But regardless, I sacrificed Quistis and that was what the world wanted.
I was going to say, like, I'd do that just to sacrifice Quistis, just to get rid of her. But we mentioned a second ago about Triple Triad, and there's often card games or like games like it in Final Fantasy, but this is one of my favourite mini games out of this series because it's, on principle, it's really simplistic, but I think it's really fun. Like, not only the game itself, but also how you collect the cards and then how you refine them and the different rule spreading. And yeah, I think it's a really good mini game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I played it a lot in the game when it first came out. And I remember there used to be tripletry.com where you could play it online. Did you ever play that?
No, I didn't, but that sounds great.
It was so good. I don't think it's still around anymore. I highly doubt it. But it's also been incorporated into Final Fantasy 14 and maybe 11 too. You can play Triple Triad in Final Fantasy 14. But yeah, it's a fun game. And it's actually quite... there's a lot of luck. It's not like a very much of a skill game. There's a little bit of skill involved, but it's very luck of the draw. But again, you can totally game the game. Once you get your first like few Guardian Force cards, because you know every character gets their own card, right? And you can collect them. And so does every Guardian Force as well. Once you got your first few character cards, first few Guardian Force cards, as long as you actively avoid spreading the random rule, it's totally gameable. You can just plow for people with those cards.
Yeah, that's the thing. Once you've got strong cards, like you say, as long as you can choose them, you're absolutely sorted. But also, the later cities where some of the like the more unpleasant rules come in, that game can get really challenging. Like, if it's on random and it's on close, so you can't see the other person's cards, and it's on same and plus, you can get absolutely blitzed at that game. And it can feel really unfair, but at the same time, like, it gets challenging.
But you can choose how to spread the rules, though, can you? You don't have to accept the rules, and if you don't accept them, you don't spread them?
Sort of. So if you just play someone, there's a chance, I don't know, like, the equation for it, but a rule will spread. I mean, if a rule spreads that you don't like, you can go to the Queen of Cards and try to pay to get it reversed or to spread a different rule, but... there's times when you can just accidentally spread it like a bloody disease and without meaning to, just by playing someone in a different city and a rule carrying over. Because I've done that numerous times where you have the option to go back to Dolit quite early on in the game, the place where you do the seed exam in like disc one. And they have, I think it's the random rule there. So I went to Dolit to get the siren card off of the guy there and accidentally picked up the random rule then. In disc one, I mean, it stuck with me for the entire bloody game and I couldn't get rid of it. And yeah, that was a pain. That made the game so much harder. I remember the point
where you tried to get the worst rule.
Card. Yeah, and it's the worst rule. And I was stuck trying to get the idea card on bloody random and I nearly cried. I was like, please, just want the card.
I hated losing cards. Especially if you lost a character card, that was devastating.
Oh, when you'd see it get turned pink and I'd be like, no, Cypher.
Yeah. But then when they turn pick on the board, and then when they won the game and chose what card they wanted of yours, I'd always pick the best one.
Exactly. So, I'm like, what do you mean you don't want my Guizard card? Take that instead.
Take Quistis.
Yeah. Please, I'll give her to you. Just take her.
Yeah, it was fun. And I don't even remember the FF9 card game because it wasn't as fun. I don't remember the rules or anything.
The 9 one was bad because it had the, you couldn't necessarily figure out what was going to happen. Like, sometimes your card would have more points than the other one and it would still lose. It had all these like weird secret equations in it. And yeah, that was shit. They should have just stuck with Triple Triad, really.
I literally do not remember them at all, the rules of that game. But Triple Triad, when did this game come out? 1998, was it?
So probably something like that. Yeah, maybe it was slightly earlier, but around then, yeah.
So 25, 24 years, and I still remember the rules completely.
Yeah, like, me too.
I mean, to be fair, I played it off of 14 as well, but yeah.
I mean, I could also hear the Triple Triad music in my head. That
I'm singing it right now in my head, like, again, though, it's the same music in Final Fantasy 14 when you go into a game. So, yeah, I've heard it recently.
Oh, is it? Oh, that makes me really happy.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing about that in 14 is that, I know this isn't a 14 podcast, but in 14 they have the Gold Saucer. Not the Gold Saucer, but it's like a big casino called the Gold Saucer. They have different like areas, and one of them is like a Triple Triad area, and you can play tournaments, but you don't really like collect cards around the world. You kind of collect them all in this arena.
Okay.
Yeah, so I liked it in Final Fantasy VIII where you, you know, you go to Balam or you go to Timberonia and you get different cards from different people. I liked that. Oh.
No, I do too.
I'm looking online to see if there's Triple Triad still exists, and I found a website called Triple Triad Extreme, which I think is the same thing, but it doesn't look the same.
I might have to look at that.
I mean, it probably wouldn't look the same from like 2001 when I last played it. That'd be very disturbing. But
I mean, I actually ordered recently, this is really sad, but I found a little company on eBay that makes the little Triple Triad cards, like little versions of them. And even though I'm never going to play with them, I did buy a deck just because I felt the need to own them in my life. Because when I was younger, they did release like official Triple Triad cards, yeah. But they're like collectors now. Like, they're so expensive. So I've got like a little Etsy version instead, and they're really cute.
Oh, I want to see. Show me afterwards. Send me a picture.
I will. They're only small. They're really little. Like they fit in the palm of my hand. They're not like big cards, but yeah, they're really cute.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a board too?
It does come with a little board, yeah. Like, oh, I could technically play Triple Triad, but, I mean, where am I going to play it? I'll just turn up to, like, a house party, like, you think beer pong's cool. Guys, I've got Triple Triad.
Guys, put down the vodka. It's time for Triple Triad.
Yeah, who wants the Quistis card? Come on, whip it out. Let's play. I'll explain all the rules.
I remember in also Final Fantasy 14, going back to that a second, you can build your own house and you can, because there's like thousands of pieces of furniture you can have for your house and styles and everything. And I insisted on having a Triple Triad on a coffee table and in my house. And people were always like, why have you got a Triple Triad there? I'm like, it looks like I play card games.
I'm like, sophisticated, don't you know?
I want the appearance of being a sophisticated gambler rather than actually doing it.
Sophisticated gambler. That's definitely the vibe that Triple Triad gives off. 100%.
Not just like 25p football stickers. You remember those? Like, they put you on an album?
I do. I mean,
it's basically the equivalent.
This is definitely the classier version, obviously. Yeah. So I was going to move on to what you think of the music of this game. Because like I said earlier, I think this is one of my favourite ever game soundtracks. Like, I can't really think of any songs in this game that I don't like. Like, I think they're all beautiful.
The soundtrack's great. It's up there with Final Fantasy VII, one of my favourites. I can still hear the garden music in my head right now. You know, the gentle kind of ambient music you have in the background when you're running around the big circle in the middle of the garden.
Oh, yeah, that's a lovely bit of music. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Laguna's theme is incredible and lively and energetic, you know, the battle theme. And let's not forget to mention, this is the first Final Fantasy game with vocals in it, which were, at the time, I remember was a really big deal, even if it's just one song.
Yeah. I know that the romance bit of this game can put people off, but the music that kind of goes along with that relationship, I think it's really lovely music.
Like, Eyes on Me, you mean?
Yeah, Eyes on Me, and there's... is it Flowers and Wine or Roses and Wine? There's a track called something along those lines, and I think it's the one that's meant to be Laguna's and Julia's that plays when they meet.
Oh yeah,
and that's really nice as well.
And she has the instrumental version of Eyes on Me too, doesn't she? Without the lyrics. You don't hear them until you go into space.
Yeah, because it's her song, isn't it? It's Julia's song that she releases about Laguna and then she dies. Yeah.
Yeah. Fisherman's Horizon, as you said earlier, is a beautiful piece of music as well. Yeah, it's a really nice, chilled soundtrack.
With the occasional kind of really creepy one, like Succession of Witches and the main Sorcerer's theme, and even the intro song, which I can't believe I didn't mention that before, is so good. What's the name of the intro one?
It's got a Latin name, hasn't it?
It does. It ends in Fatali. I can't remember the first word.
But that's another one which has got lyrics in it, like vocals in it, sorry. You can hear people singing in that song, and it's great. Yeah. And I'm not going to sing it, even though I totally could, but I can hear it in my head right now, the Latin words, you know, with when it opens and there's like a beach and it shows you the water on the beach, the tide coming in.
That intro is amazing. I kind of would dare anyone to pick up that game and see that intro and not be like, I want to see more of this game. I want to see what happens next, because that music combined with all like the imagery of that is so good. That's like fantasy at its best as an FMV.
Showing you how Squall got his Harry Potter scar and everything.
Exactly. So dramatic. I love it.
The blood on the ground. Does it show you like, doesn't it almost show you him getting hit and then it cuts the blood splattering on the ground? So dramatic.
It does, but I remember seeing that when I was a kid and I was like, oh my God, he's bleeding. Yeah. This is such a hardcore game.
I mean, if that was a real wound, I mean, I'm no doctor, but surely that'd be quite a severe one.
Yeah, you'd think so. And yet all the doctors bit like, you should go a bit easier next time. Go do the exam.
It's like four drops of blood on the ground.
And it's just got face sliced open.
It's just kind of mildly pink the whole game. Like, it doesn't even look that bad. In fact, it suits him in a way.
It does. I think I mentioned it before, but it made me want to have a scar. It looks so cool.
Well, in real life, it would be like bright red and pussy and infected and gross.
Yeah, exactly. And so infected, because literally he gets that scar and then he's like, right, I better go into that fire cavern the same day.
And doesn't Sifa drag his sword along the ground right before he does it too? Because, I mean, there's going to be dirt in it and everything. It's going to be gross.
It's going to be so gross. And literally a couple of days later, he's climbing around in a sewer. Like, it's going to go so bad. He's going to get sepsis.
I've got an open wound. I'm going to dive into this sewer.
Yeah, there's Manoa like, oh, I've become unconscious from becoming a sorceress. As well as like, yeah, but I've got face gangrene. Like, who's got it worse?
Also, he was so lucky not to get one of his eyes taken out or scratched or whatever, like just in the middle of his face.
He was, but at the same time, I reckon Squall could pull off a pirate patch.
He totally could. He'd be totally nonchalant about it. Like, oh, this patch? Oh, no, I don't remember where I got it from.
Yeah, can't be bothered to talk about it. Everyone just embrace it. I don't want to say
whatever.
I was like, Squall's such an unsocial character, but I still quite like him. We haven't actually talked about characters yet. I've just realised. Should we have a quick chat about them? Just completely skip them. I was like, let's talk about Triple Triad instead. But I mean, starting with Squall, he's a very emotionally damaged character. And whereas with Cloud and Final Fantasy VII, who was a similar sort of person, with Squall, you can see what he's thinking inside his head for pretty much all of his conversations. So even though he comes across as a very cold, stoic person, you can't help but kind of like him, because you can see how, like, in so much turmoil he is under the surface. And I think it makes him a really good, interesting character.
Really? Because I always thought he was a dick.
I mean, he is a dick. Don't get me wrong.
He's really rude to people, and you don't really know why for the first, like, half of the game. I mean, you do get some reason later on. He softens up, of course, as well, but like when you first start the game, he's so rude to people, and I never liked him because of that.
He is, but I still quite like it. Like, one of my earliest memories of Squall is when you have the first Laguna dream, Selfie's like, oh, Laguna was so handsome, and Zoe's like, yeah, that was so cool, and I had such a nice dream. And Squall's like, I didn't have a nice dream. I dreamt I was a moron. And I was okay, Squall.
Is that on the train? I remember that one.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. He's not my favourite main character.
No, I wouldn't say he's my favourite, but I always have thought he was kind of just quite a cool character. I always quite liked him. I had a bit of a girl crush on Squall when I was a kid, I must admit.
A girl crush.
teenage girl crush, yeah.
He does look cool. I remember for a time I thought that, like, I mean, basically he's wearing a parka, right? That fur-lined collar thing. I thought that was so cool. And the leather trousers and the sword, the gunblade that no one knows how exactly it works, you know? This confusing weapon. Yeah, but I didn't like him much at all. Like I said, though, he did soften up a lot as the game went on. And towards the end, I do like him. But, like, I think they purposely went to make a happier protagonist in the next few games because you had, like, Final Fantasy VI, where I know you haven't played it, right? You haven't. Have you played Final Fantasy VI? I don't remember.
I've played about half of it, but not the full thing.
So you have Terra, T-E-R-R-A, not Terror. And she is the main character, but she's not at the same time. She's like, yeah, you know, like Vaan is the main character, but also not.
Yeah.
It's like that. And she's just like a she's very quiet and she's, the story's built around her, but it's not like about her, if you get me. I mean, it is about her. It's very hard to describe. She's not the focus of the story. Whereas in 7, you had Grumpy Cloud, of course, until the end when it gets a bit perkier. And then Final Fantasy VIII, you have Angsty Squall, again. Oh, who,
angsty is the perfect word, yeah.
Yeah, teenage angsty squall. And then you get to 9 and, like, Zidane, the monkey, like, swinging on the rafters on his tail. And then...
so happy-go-lucky. And it's like, oh, the opposite. And then Tidus is pretty fucking cheerful as well in 10.
Yeah, Tidus is so happy and so cheerful and such an idiot.
Yeah, he's like a kind of mix of happy with a little bit of angst mixed in, but it works. Yeah.
And obviously 11, that wasn't, you know, you pick your own character or whatever. Vaan was a happy character, but he's not the main character again, is he right? And then 13, they had enough of the happy characters and it was back to grumpy.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about 13 at some point, but I didn't appreciate going back to it. And I think the really cold stoic character works even less when it's a voice acted game, because it sounds, at least when you're reading it, you can kind of hear it in your head in the best way. When you're hearing a voice actor who sounds just bored of everything around them, I'm like, oh, I'm really not invested in this. So yeah.
Yeah.
Again, we'll speak about 13 at some point, but really not a fan of that.
I didn't like, is Lightning her name? That's Lightning, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't like her very much at all. But then other characters I liked a lot in that game. But I remember that she was like the face of Dior and Porsche and Gucci. Like, why? What is there's nothing about this woman. There's nothing about this character, this woman that says anything, that she's like this high sort of fashion. I just didn't get it. I really didn't get it.
No, I mean, there's so many things around Final Fantasy 13 and what happened with those games that I do not understand. That's definitely one of them.
Anyway, we're off track. Back several games, Final Fantasy VIII.
Yes, completely back track. So I'd say the other one of the main characters really is Rinoa, who, again, a lot of people don't like her and they find it irritating, but I really like Rinoa. I think she's a really nice contrast to Squall, where she's overly happy and go-lucky and just enjoys being around people and being involved. Yeah, I really like her.
I like her too. And I like the dynamic she brought, where, like, she's not really, she's the only person in the party that's not a Seed member. So she's the only person that's not military, right?
Yeah.
And she brings a different sort of human dynamic to the group, I think, like, outside perspective.
Yeah. And I quite like her because she's quite a flawed person. Like, she can act quite childish and say quite selfish things when she's in a bit of a temper tantrum because she's got quite a bit of a short temper. But I like the fact she's quite flawed as a person. Like, it's more interesting than these female protagonists that are always so wholesome and so good and always doing the right. As much as I like Yuna from Final Fantasy X, I'm not a big fan of that. She's the perfect woman who does nothing wrong and never irritates anyone and always is trying to do the best. Rinoa's not like that. She always calls people out on shit and can be really abrasive and, you know, bitchy when she wants to be. But at the end of the day, deep down, she is nice and wants to help people. But I prefer that kind of female protagonist.
Yeah, there was a whole thing at the start about, like, her being a princess, right? Remember that? That, oh, when she started having a strap on the floor.
Yeah, literally. And I quite liked that because I was like, I've had those moments in my life and I can, in fact, relate to this.
It wasn't even that bad. Like, the reason that she was upset wasn't really that bad, if I remember correctly. No, and was like, oh, she's such a diva. What a princess.
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, God, I do this all the time. Makes me like her more.
Yeah, I like her a lot, too. And I like her character design with the weird long blue cardigan.
Yeah, I it's so impractical, but I think it's a great design where it almost looks kind of like a dress, especially from the back. But it's an interesting design. And her black hair with that light blue just always looked really good.
And in the dance scene, the ball scene, I like that cream dress she's wearing, that cream colored dress.
Oh, yeah. I'd say that dance scene, including that you're the best looking guy here, is like an iconic section of gaming. It's great.
I can sing that music too, like
yeah, me too.
In fact, I remember when I was a kid, I used to act out that scene. So I think I think when I first got the internet, it was like 1999, 2000. I downloaded the FMV from Napster. I know, illegal. Try not to prosecute me. I would play it over and over again, and I'd like act out Squall's bit, and then I'd start and act out Renoa's bit, just in my bedroom, just chilling.
That's spectacular, including that saying in a mirror, "You're the best looking guy here." But thank you.
Oh, no. I don't mean that. It's the actual FMV bit that I did. So the dance, you know, when he tries to walk away.
I've never been prouder to be your friend than I am right now. You say that I'm the Final Fantasy VIII fan. At least I never fucking did this.
Oh, my memories are coming back to me. Excuse me. You said you wanted to dress as Renoa, didn't you? And didn't you write Renoa fan fiction? You've had your share of stuff too.
Technically, my grandma typed out my Final Fantasy VIII fan fiction. Technically. So.
Yeah, you sat on a sofa, like, eating bonbons and demanding your grandma. Well, you dictated to her the story. She wrote it out for you.
Eating bonbons.
Yes.
Like a fancy middle-aged woman. Like, I'll sit here on my chaise lounge chair with my bonbons while my poor slave grandma types.
You're like, and then Renoa walked into the room and your grandmother were typing furiously.
Yeah, frantically typing in Rhino. And I was like, grandma, pull yourself
Rhino.
Through this. It's not Rhino, okay? I'll throw bonbons at you if you keep
So as a kid, when I first played the game, my favorite character was Selphie, and I have no fucking idea why. I thought she was great, and I used to like, back when it was a thing, I mean it still is in certain circles, but it's like, look at fan art, like, oh my god, Selphie fan art, oh that's so cute, oh that's so cool, and you know, all these pictures, and I saved them, I had a big folder full of Selphie art, and I've absolutely zero idea to this day why I was so obsessed, because she's one of the blandest characters in the game. Although she does have the best limit break, which I really like, and I like her fighting style. But anyway, regardless, I liked her appearance. I liked the dungaree dress thing. I thought it was so cool, and the flicky hair, which is so like late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh yeah, the hair is terrible. So I liked Sylphie when I was younger as well, but I always used to like those like overly happy characters when I was a kid, whereas I don't really like them anymore. But her limit break, in fact, when I most recently replayed this game a few months ago, I got the end come up as her limit. And I wasn't even trying to get it. Like literally, I was in like the first disc and I flicked through a couple trying to get to like the full queue and it just turned up. And I was like, oh my God, this is a huge moment. I've never had the end come up. Really? As one of her limit break options. Yeah, I was very excited.
That's great. I never had it come up naturally. I used to force it, you know, when you could like press square and go to the next one.
Yeah. See, I literally
so I would sit there pressing square for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's it. I didn't even have to like scroll. I literally scrolled through like three and it just turned up. And I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. What a moment.
It makes no sense, right? Like, it just, the enemy appears in a field of flowers and says, the end, then they die. And it even works on the final boss.
Oh, does it? Oh, I didn't realize it worked on the final one. Oh,
it works on every single enemy in the game, every single one.
Oh, I think it appeared on mine when I was fighting one of those caterpillars. And I was like, what a fucking
What a waste.
Yeah.
Like, you can kill a caterpillar or Ultimecia.
Literally a bite bug, and I was like, right, the end, there we go. I could have done this just by slapping it, but okay. But you see, you loved Selphie. My favourite character was always Zell, for similar reasons.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Oh, he was great.
I
found him really fun.
I don't know why, but I never got... I think it's because he was so cocky and he reminds me of all the straight boys at school. I just didn't like him.
I just thought he was so, like, childlike and just an idiot constantly.
He was an idiot.
And not only an idiot, but everyone... Like, people didn't treat him like he was cool. Everyone treated him like he was a fucking idiot the whole game. And he never grows out of that. Even by the end of it, Squall's like, I literally don't want to hear what you have to say because you're rubbish. Like, just stop it, Zell. And I just love it.
I didn't like his design either, with the face tattoo and the weird hair and the shorts. And no. And the fact that he stands there punching the air sometimes, it really annoyed me.
Oh, yeah. He was a ridiculous character, but I still have a bit of a soft spot, I must admit, just for him, for no reason. Even though he's one of those characters where I think if he was voice acted, he would be insufferable.
Like, it's basically Ryuji. It's basically Ryuji. You love Ryuji as well.
Yeah, pretty much is. It's true.
and we both hate Quistis.
Oh, Quistis with her bloody tutorials and her stupid apologizing, messed up the mission. And she always acts like she's so mature. She's 18. She acts like she's about 47 and works in a library. Oh,
yeah. So she's a supervisor or a teacher or whatever. And I don't get it because she's only a year older than them.
Yeah, and has a crush on a student and flirts with him relentlessly through the first bit of that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big ethical dilemma for her. Like, oh my God, I can't be with you because I'm a teacher and this is so unethical. Like, Chris, you can't have been teaching that long. And
yeah, and also, Squall has no interest in you.
I don't like her design. I hated her orange cardigan. Orange is my favourite colour, but on her, it made me really angry. And the whip, that's a strange weapon. I never understood that.
Yeah, you got kind of like teacher dominatrix vibes off of her almost. It was she's a strange design for
But she's not like that in personality, girl. Though. Yeah, but she's not like that in personality or anything. Like Anne in Persona, she also has a whip and she's also highly sexualized as well. And yeah. I don't agree with it, but in context, it kind of makes sense. And yeah, Chris is just a random whip.
Yeah, whereas she's like the most like mature adult one of the group. And yeah, I agree, it doesn't fit. She was definitely always my least favourite, and she still is.
I suppose Fina has a whip in Grandia too, but even that feels more natural than Quistis. I don't know what it is about Quistis and the whip. It doesn't sit with me properly.
No, and I think Fina and Grandia, there's certain scenes, like when they're on that ghost ship where she uses like ropes and whips and things to like get out of situations because she's an adventurer, and it just it fits a bit better. Whereas Quistis, it's, yeah, very strange choice. And then, like you said before, like, Idia is, I think, one of the best character designs in that game.
Yeah, she's like, incredible.
She is. Appearance and her, like, storyline of how it progresses, both really good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any other game that's, like, the main antagonist at the start of the game becomes a nice person later and helps you and joins a party. I can't think of anything like that.
No, I can't. And especially with a design that's that interesting as well. Like, when you see the FMVs of her for the first time, it looks amazing.
Oh, you mean when she smashed you through a glass roof? Yes, I remember that very well.
Yeah, well, when she first appears and like she kind of semi-possesses Renoa and sets the monsters on her, and she like walks through that wall, like she liquefies the wall and walks through it.
Oh, yeah,
That FMV, she just looks so cool and so sinister and beautiful at the same time. Like, yeah. Amazing.
She's great. And I appreciate that, you know, she wasn't a villain in the end, but I kind of wish she was, because she's a way better, more interesting villain than Ultimisia will ever be.
Oh, definitely.
But it's nice to see her when she's like out of this villain phase, and she's not being possessed, and she's with Cid and she's totally normal. I like that bit too.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the small little thing that when you nearly beat her at the end of Disc 1 and she like throws that ice shard into Squall, when you have her later in the party, that's her limit break. And yeah. I like that kind of continuation of you nearly killed her at Disc 1, so she used a limit break on you. I like that little kind of battle quirk, like following through into like the real life of the game. I like that.
I have a question for you about some side characters.
Oh, yeah.
What did you make of Rajin and Fujin?
quite liked them. I mean, the way that she speaks is very unnatural, where she just shouts words in all caps.
It's like one word, like rage.
Exactly. And I'm like, sad. Awful as a friend in real life. But I like their little dynamic of them kind of nodding at each other and just following Cypher around, and eventually they abandon him because he's gone too far. And yeah, I thought they were quite simple characters, but they were quite a nice little addition.
I like them too, Anna. But I used to think, like, whenever something bad's going to happen, they'd be there to fight you, and like, you roll your eyes, oh my god, here they are again, I'm going to kill them again, they're going to run away.
Yeah, they were simplistic, but I was fine with them being there, I must admit.
Yeah, I like
them. At least they were like an enemy with a reason to be there, because they were Cypher's friends, rather than being like a generic soldier appears to fight you. Like, at least they had a bit of storyline to why they were there.
Yeah, and a bit of personality as well.
Yeah. So should we move to our overall thoughts of the game?
Yes, and I think you should go first and give me your paragraphs of thoughts.
So I love this game. When we did our top 10 RPGs, really? Surprising, isn't it? So when we did that, I was really torn between this being my favorite game or Shadow Hearts, and Shadow Hearts just edged this one out. But I think it's a fantastic game. I would happily replay it again tomorrow, even though I've already played it so many times in my life, because I'd never get bored of the battle system. I always enjoy seeing the characters interact, and like the many different dialogue choices you can get in this game, depending on how you answer and depending on other choices you made earlier in the game. Like, you can see so many different options when you play this compared to other times. Yeah, I just think it's fantastic. And little quirks like having the triple triad in there, I just think it's really fun.
Yes. And anyone listening, whenever like a new game comes out, Charlotte will play it for like, I don't know, an hour or two. You'll text her going, oh, how's that new game going? How's, I don't know, Persona 5 going? Oh, I don't know. I'm just playing Final Fantasy again. Final Fantasy 8 again. I decided to play again.
And you get angry every time. I've got to the stage now where I don't even tell you sometimes when I'm replaying it, because I don't want to face your judgment.
I'm not angry, I'm disappointed.
If you're there like, what do you mean you're playing Final Fantasy 8 instead of Yakuza? And I'm like, just leave me alone. Let me live my life.
And when we were at uni, like, I text you going like, oh my God, Charlotte, I'm so stuck. Like, oh, what is Quorum Sensing? And then you'd be like, I don't know, I'm fighting Rajin and Fujin at the moment.
Yeah, you'd be there like, Charlotte, we've got a microbiology essay due in a week. And I'm like, yeah, but look what Squall's up to. Like, you know what Squall's up to. You've played it 12 times.
To be fair, I do have games I go back to as well, but they're not actually RPGs. I don't tend to go back to them very often. I used to play Final Fantasy 7 and 10 a lot. I played them several times, but they're really the only ones I ever went back to. I tend to go back to games like City Skyline. You know, the games that you can just kind of turn on and play for an hour and turn it off?
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, for me, Final Fantasy 8 was one of the better and earlier Final Fantasies. Like, you know, like the new generation, like 7 onwards on PlayStation 1 Plus games. Yeah. It's one of the better ones. And I really liked at the time the graphics. I mean, it's hard to appreciate this now, but at the time, like Final Fantasy 7 with beautiful like rendered backgrounds and stuff, but the characters look like absolute trash, you know, like with Cloud and his really skinny elbows and his gigantic forearms, you know what I mean? And then 8 came along, it's like, whoa, this is so realistic. Like, they've got non-bodily proportions, Squall is just so handsome, and honestly, at the time, that was revolutionary. Now it looks like complete trash, of course, but it was great, and I really did appreciate that. And I like that move away from fantasy and, well, I mean, away from like high fantasy and towards more like a realistic kind of setting, or at least like a world where I recognize as being somewhere that you could feasibly live, but also have a fantasy element to it.
Yeah. It's a really good combination of true modern day gaming and real fantasy mixed in there. It's a nice combo rather than having just one.
I remember, do you get a car in the game, don't you?
You can get cars, yeah. You can rent cars in most of the cities, yeah.
I thought that was fascinating. Like, whoa, a car? Like a car? Like, I know you get a kind of a car as well in Seven, but it wouldn't look anything like a car. It looked like a pillbox. I don't even know how to describe it. But in it, I don't know, in Eight, it was just more realistic. The technology, even though, yeah, I appreciate it's a fantasy game, but the tech, some of it was like plausible in the real world. The locations had a real world feel to them sometimes. And I really appreciated that. And I really like the characters, the characterization as well. Like we said earlier, the story did get complex in parts when I was younger, but I understand it now. But I think it's a fun story. It's fun. And it's lighthearted in parts as well. The Laguna side quests are quite funny and romantic. And yeah, my overall thoughts are I like the game.
I mean, it had that feeling of playing this when I was young, when I was in a school. It had that similar feeling to why I feel like I liked Harry Potter when I was a kid, where it almost felt like this story could happen to you. Like it wasn't a completely magical world that you couldn't relate to. It was kids in a school, driving cars, going on trains, but then all these magical things would happen. And it just made it feel like you could just potentially have this story happen to you as a kid the next day when you went to school. Like it had that real life element. And I loved that when I was 12.
Yeah, you two could make your school fly around the town or the continent and hijack a train and kill the president who's actually a monster.
I too could make my school fly in order to save it from army missiles and then become a sorceress for next day and then go to space. Like it could happen.
You know, one thing we didn't mention about the world is those little tiger creatures never appeared again in any Final Fantasy game, did they?
Oh, Moombas. No,
yeah,
they didn't.
Oh, they're so cute.
I think the only thing I've seen them appear in, and now that I'm saying it, I'm not even 100% sure they did, but in Final Fantasy X, are some of Lulu's weapons Moombas?
Oh, yeah.
Or am I imagining that?
Yeah, she has like dolls from different creatures in the fantasy series, and she has a Karachua, a Tombury, and a Moogle.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if one of them's a Moomba, or if I'm just imagining that in my head.
I'm fairly sure you're right, yeah, I'm sure that's right.
Yeah, but you're right, they never really appear again, which is a shame because I quite like their design. I thought they were interesting. Right, so should we go to our final ratings of the game?
Need I even bother asking you what you give this game?
I'm torn between ratings of this because there's the rating that I would give it in my heart and the game that if I was like a game critic, I would give it because I'd say they're different. But
you are a game critic. This is what we're doing.
It's true. What scoring system are we using it?
Oh, we should pay homage to the creatures we just mentioned. I forgot the name of already.
Oh, Moombas.
Yeah, they do Moombas. They don't have any appearances. Let's pay them an homage.
That's true. That's nice. Let's do that. So I would give this game, in my heart, to how much I enjoy it, I'd give it a 9 out of 10, I think.
9 out of 10
If I was
what?
Critical with its flaws, I'd say probably 8 out of 10. But I'm going to go 9.
Can I just say 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 what, Charlotte?
I'm sorry, 9 out of 10 Moombas is what I would give.
I understand now. I was just baffled until you said that.
Oh, yeah, it made no sense before, yeah.
I'm surprised that you're giving it an 8 from your critic perspective. I thought you'd be a solid 10 out of 10, ignoring all the flaws in the game, ignoring that Rinoa lives in space for 25 minutes and doesn't die, that kind of thing.
Oh, it's got too many flaws for if I was going to like critically analyse it for it to give a bug, because the storyline, especially the later third, it really doesn't make any sense at all. And the game can be really easily broken to the point where if you figure it out early on, especially if you did it on your first playthrough, there would be no challenge. And I can see why people get infuriated by the fact that monsters level up with you, that you don't really feel like you're progressing very much in that game at times. So I can see the flaws, but in my heart, it's like a 9, 9.5 because of how much I love it.
I actually like the level up with you. I find that makes it easier because you don't have to go looking for certain high levels monsters. But yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah. For me, I'd give it an 8. A Final Fantasy 8 out of 10 Moombas. Oh, that was a joke that I didn't think through very well.
I appreciate it. It fell
completely flat. Okay.
Hang on. Say it again and I'll do a laugh. Right, try again.
Okay. I give this game a score of Final Fantasy VIII out of 10.
You're so funny, oh,
so genuine. So realistic.
That was heartfelt, that laugh. Truly heartfelt.
Okay, delete all that. I'm sure you won't. You'll even leave this part in.
Try and stop me. It's fine.
I will give this game 8 out of 10 Moombas. I think it's a great game. I think it's actually aged pretty well too. The graphics haven't, of course, but the remastered version sorted that out. And yeah, like you said, the story can get really convoluted in parts, especially towards the end. And the game can be broken, which is a shame because I wish it was more of a challenge. But to be honest, the Final Fantasy series isn't really a challenge anyway. Like, none of the games are particularly very hard, are they?
No, that's very true. It's not exactly Dark Souls, is it? It's no. A game that you're meant to be able to finish.
Yeah. I mean, you can get stuck, of course, but you always find a way around it, and it's always achievable. I just wish it wasn't so achievable so early on in this game.
Yeah, I agree. But at the same time, still fun.
Yeah, completely. Oh, well, that was a nice episode. We got your favourite game out of the way. Now you can never mention it ever again.
Oh, I'm going to be mentioning it, but I never can replay it in like 2 days.
You're kidding me? I bet it's loaded up right now on the screen. You've got it in pause waiting for this to end, haven't you?
Not even pause, it's actively playing it on mute, just in the background.
You're the little blue alien, you're about to fight him, you're just waiting to kill him. Is it called Poo Poo? I think he is, isn't he?
Yes, but you don't want to kill him, you want to give him a load of elixirs so that he gives you his card.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember. Oh, my God. God, you know everything about this game. You know, look anything up.
It's painful how well I know this game. Like some of our other games I've had to replay or had a look online just to remind myself, not needed for this. It's burned into my brain. Like in the future when I'm really old and I can't even remember my own name, I'll still be able to recite every bit of Final Fantasy VIII, I'm sure. It's going to happen.
I bet that when you're old and you're in a nursing home and, you know, you're like 98 years old, midnight, all the lights are out in the nursing home, and then a voice from your room goes, "Evil." You know the intro song?
Yeah,
that'll be you singing it in bed, really in the darkness, really creeping everyone out, I'm sure.
Thank you. You've got really high hopes for me in the future. I appreciate that.
It's quite a vision I just painted for myself. I'm actually scared now.
Yeah, the way you did it was quite creepy as well, just kind of emerging from my laptop.
Emerging? Oh, right. I thought you meant like the ring style, like coming out the screen.
Yes, Steve, you emerged out of my laptop screen going, heave-ho.
My spirit. Heave-ho. I don't think that's the word, but yeah, let's just say that from now on. Heave-ho.
I was thinking of, was it Guido?
Guido, yeah. Heave-ho. The arrow.
That's what I was thinking of.
All right, what is our next episode?
I don't actually know, to be honest. What is our next episode?
I don't know.
Let's do our next episode.
We haven't done one of those like discussion episodes for a long time. Let's do one of those.
That's true. What are we going to do?
Like top 10 cats of RPGs, that kind of thing.
I think I can maybe name two, but I'll run out.
What? Kate Sith and...
Can I count a Moogle? Can I count that in there?
No, it's not a cat. Okay, this is a bad idea. Let's not do
this. This is a terrible idea.
We could do food in Final Fantasy games or something.
Yeah, that could work.
We'll discuss, I'm sure.
Yes, we'll come up with something. So yes, our next episode is going to be on currently a mystery topic because we are not well prepared enough yet to have come up with something.
Yes, but if you're one of our 3 followers on Twitter, we will be sure to post it and keep you informed.
Half of which are our friends.
So we'll keep you informed. So please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. We haven't had one since last October and we are dying for new reviews.
We are. It would make us very happy. Unless you say nasty things, then we might genuinely cry.
Oh yeah, please only leave 5-star reviews. If you want to leave anything lower than that, don't bother.
Yeah, if you're like, you guys are shit, then, you know, way to break our hearts.
Oh, someone's totally going to do that now.
especially not on this episode. Like, come on.
Okay, start again. Please leave a 5-star review or don't even bother.
Yeah, or fuck
That's
off.
Aggressive. and yeah, give us a follow on Twitter and yeah, catch you on the flippity flip.
Oh, things we can't pull off. Yeah. See you later, bros.
Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.